Houston. You're live in the Hive with the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So Summer of the Bees, and we have a depressing segment. Monday was the anniversary of the John Stockton shot that beat the Rockets in the Western Conference Finals. Asking you, what is your most heartbreaking defeat as a sports fan? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I guess this is up there for you, Blankers?
Yeah, it's one of two that really comes to mind for me because of just the finality of it. I remember vividly, you know, first of all, I was tweeting about this when I put it out there, that the other day when the anniversary happened, Karl Malone set the most egregious illegal screen I've ever seen, that no one seems to realize when they give Stockton all the credit in the world for making the shot. But the fact that that was it, I mean, the Rockets had made great comebacks in that series. They looked like they were going to take control of it and get into another finals. And then I remember sitting in the small tunnel that the teams came out of in the summit with Charles. He was still in uniform an hour and a half after the game, and he was still shaking his head, and he still couldn't believe that Stockton made that shot and they weren't going any further, and it sucked. And the other one that came to mind almost as much as was Lillard's shot in Portland, because as much as they had gotten the best of us in the first two games, you know, Chandler Parsons got a backdoor cut and a layup with like a second and a half left, and it felt like, oh, we're going to take control of this series, and we're going to go take it back to Houston, and we're going to take care of business, and we're going to win. And then he hit that shot, and the whole season ended just like that. And you just sit there for a minute, and you just kind of feel that pit in your stomach going, damn, it's over.
Yeah, somebody said that the Harden when they lost to the Warriors was worse than that one. The 18 Rockets was the worst because we were for sure going to win a championship versus, I guess,
that's the year. Chris Paul hamstring.
Yeah, I think that was they started 0 for 27.
The 0 for 27 from 3.
From 3. That one's a pretty good one. For me, it's probably U of H related.
By the way, on that note, someone was out there the other day when the anniversary happened saying that they mentioned that game that you're talking about,
mm-hmm,
and said, but the referees took it from us. There was the referees that were bad in that game.
A lot of people think
you missed 27-3.
Yeah, a lot of people think it was a poorly officiated game. Well,
that's
sure.
Why Daryl sent 89 pages to the league office.
That's a lot of pages. For me, it was Jordan Poole and Tyler Hero. Those are my two most heartbreaking losses. A lot of people were saying the 84 national championship game with NC State. Obviously, that's a huge one from a U of H point of view. I wasn't alive yet. I was born in 85. But that one's the most painful. What do you got, Joe George, when the White Sox lost something?
Bartman?
No, Bartman, because they had a game 7, so it doesn't count. So
I thought that was game 7.
That's game 6. Yes, that's game 6.
Okay.
They had a lead, and then Alex Gonzalez let it go through his leg.
Who started that game for the Cubs?
I don't know. I don't know if it was Witt or Pryor.
Did they have one of the guys ready for game 7?
I don't remember. It's so long ago. It's easy for me because it's the only time where I think I've had a legitimate ref beef in my life, because they didn't follow the rules of the game. It's the Bush push. Notre Dame, for me, I know what they are. They're overrated.
That was game 7.
They're stuck up. Steve Bartman was not game 7.
It was game 7.
No.
So Bartman was game 6 and they lost game 7?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
But that series went 7.
Yes.
Okay, okay.
But it's the Bush push, because that play was illegal. They didn't call it, and that's really the only Notre Dame team in my life that I've actually believed in that could win something, because they had Brady Quinn.
The Bush push.
That game sucked.
Yeah. Everybody does that nowadays. It's not even against the rules
anymore.
They're
trying.
It's kind of like the Eagles when they just do the whole...
They're trying to make it illegal because of the Eagles.
Yeah, they are.
I don't think it should be illegal. I think it should be a legal play. It's football. It's a physical game. It's a contact sport. I think it should be legal.
It's kind of rugby.
So?
Well, that's a different sport.
Why can't you push a guy? If the defense is trying to bring you down to the ground and tackle you, why can't your teammate help push you forward?
I don't really...
You stand on his feet?
I don't have a huge problem with it.
I don't. I think it should be totally legal.
Yeah, I think people just don't like it because they can't do it.
Yeah.
You can't do that unless you have Jalen Hurts.
It takes a special personnel package to be able to do with the Eagles.
Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts. Who else could do that?
Tom Brady was great at quarterback sneaks.
Yeah, that's true.
For some reason.
You
wouldn't think Hurts, Allen, Brady.
For a guy that doesn't like to get touched.
Yeah. It was weird. 713-780-ESPN. What are your most painful sports losses?
King of Twitch. Houstonians, it's got to be the 35-3.
Yeah, King of Twitch says that's a layup. Oilers lost to Buffalo in 92. We got some callers,
too. What about the Renfro play against the corner of the end zone?
That's probably up there against the Steelers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 713-780-3776. Go out to the HRP listener line. Pena, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What you got, Pena?
What's going on, guys? So that game seven against the Nats, probably the most heartbreaking for me. And 09 when McCoy got taken out the game against Bama. Yeah. That's probably also one of them also for me. That's about it. Thank y'all. Have a great day.
Colt McCoy. The problem with the Colt McCoy is they were losing pretty badly, if I remember. Yeah. And then who was the – Gilbert? Was it Garrett Gilbert that came in and, like, actually played – he started off poorly.
Yeah.
But he started to pick up some steam late in that game and, like, kind of got him back to, like, a reasonable margin.
It was, like, a lesser than of when Tua replaced – Jalen Hurts.
Oh, way lesser.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm saying, but I do remember that that wasn't it because Colt McCoy's dad was in the locker room. They were all he rushed down there and
his collarbone,
something like that. Yeah.
That was at the Rose Bowl, if memory serves. 713-780-3776. Game seven of the World Series against the Nationals.
I thought that too.
Recent heartbreak for the Astros. You know, the one that stuck with me a lot from an Astros perspective whenever I was younger was, I can't remember the exact year, but remember they had the stretch of years where they were playing the Braves and they were getting beaten by the Braves all the time. Mm-hmm. There was a situation, I can't remember what game at all, but there was a situation the Astros had the bases loaded, nobody out, and all they needed was like a run, and the Braves got out of it. Walt Weiss made a diving play up the middle, got the out at the plate. That's one that stuck with me. I can't remember the exact game, though. And it was only a divisional series. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line for Isaac. What you got, Isaac? You're in the Hive.
Isaac.
Isaac.
Yeah, can
I? Yeah, we can go. Yeah, we go got ahead. You now.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, the most disgusting comeback ever is when the Buffalo Bills came back and beat the Oilers.
That was a rough one. Appreciate it,
the
Isaac.
Frank Reich.
Frank comeback. Reich won that game. Yeah. I remember Andre Reed, Don Beebe. Yeah. That team was...
Thurman Thomas on that team?
The thing that... Yeah, Thurman Thomas was on that team. The thing that always kind of sticks with me from that one, like, obviously that was a devastating loss, but people like revisionist history that game big time to where, like, they were saying that the Houston Oilers were going to win the Super Bowl that year. I'm pretty sure that was the wild card round and they were on the road. Like, yeah. I don't know if it's fair to say that the Houston Oilers were going to go to the Super Bowl that year. I know that Buffalo ended up going to the Super Bowl, but that was the first round. You were playing on the road. You didn't have home field advantage. I don't think it's fair to say that the Oilers were going to go to the Super Bowl the year that they lost to Buffalo and they blew the 35-3 lead.
I think details become irrelevant when you just remember the game and you remember how good Warren Moon was at throwing the football, and they were a pretty prolific offense.
Yeah.
But you got to play, obviously, three phases of the game.
Texans up 24.
That was the wild card round.
Texans up 24-0. You think that's for anyone?
Big.
It's not as good as the – I don't think it's as heartbreaking as the Oilers.
But
in
that's
92.
Big.
What's weird about that game, I never felt confident in that Texans team, period, and I never felt they were going to win the game, even when they were up 24-0.
It was all fluky.
Yeah.
But I kept saying, O'Brien's going to find a way to let Kansas City in this. I just didn't expect before halftime that it would have flipped the script that much. That was painful.
Yeah, that one was a weird one, but I didn't have faith in that Texans team making a deep run. I know they would have hosted the AFC Championship the week after, and even when they were up 24-0, I just didn't feel confident the Texans were going to win that game. 4781, biggest heartbreak as a fan for me had to be when I was 7 years old. Kirk Gibson walked it off against the Oakland Single A's. I was a fan of the Bash Brothers and the Single A's. I guess they were a little bit better than that then. 713-780-ESPN.
That I don't believe what I just saw?
That was
Jack Buck.
No, that was the home run with the Cardinals. I think that was a walk-off for the Cardinals. Vin Scully was the Kirk Gibson of the year of the improbable, the impossible
That's
has
right.
happened.
That's right.
713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. John, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, John?
John, go.
Hey, guys. So, diehard Patriot fan, I'm sorry. But 2007, 16-0. Losing to the New York Giants.
That was the helmet catch. Eli made a couple of great throws on that.
Hey, here's the thing. I don't think, John, I don't think you get it. You don't get to partake.
If you're the Patriots fan?
Yeah.
Because you won so many titles?
You probably got 15. If you're a Patriots fan, you probably like the Bruins, the Red Sox, the Celtics. Well, maybe not if you're calling us. But, like, you got, like, seven titles with Tom Brady.
Junior Brocco said Paul Gallant on a mobile.
That's pretty good.
I think the most devastating thing for him was whenever Tom Brady left New England and went to Tampa Bay.
I think you're right. Doesn't he call him Tom Brady is still Is he God?
I don't know what
something
he calls
like
him.
That.
He could refers
like
to him as like Lord Tom Brady.
Wrist says Pujols when he hit it off a ledge.
Ooh,
see that one's up there. Now the Astros did they win won that series. Yep. But it threw off your rotation in the World Series because you had to go Oswalt in Game 6 in St. Louis instead of Oswalt in Game 1 against the White Sox. 713-780-3776. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, what's the most painful loss for you?
Hey, man, my most painful loss was actually a win, man, but it all came crumbling down when Matt Schaub got hurt against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, that team right there, I believe the 2011 team was, I'm not going to predict no Super Bowls, but I can tell you one thing, that team with T.J. Yates lost by 7 points by a touchdown against Baltimore because my most painful loss was losing Matt Schaub in 2011 against Tampa Bay. That's all.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's
from
the one
that
where they trashed Jacoby Jones's front yard, and he got home after the trip, and they had like done all kinds of stuff to his front yard and everything else, and the fans were not too happy.
My cousin Justin got married on the day that they lost to the Baltimore Ravens. But, yeah, that was a good team. That was a really
good
team.
They
didn't have their quarterback. Corey says mine was the Dez catch, no catch, which was not a catch. A totally right call and was not a catch.
I was there.
Were you really?
Yeah.
We have a lot of Cowboy fans. A lot of people are saying the Romo dropped a field goal.
Snap.
When you dropped the field goal against the Seahawks.
Yep.
V-Dog 62 says that. We got a lot of Cowboy fans. We have a Spurs fan here. When Ray Allen hit the three against the Spurs to force a game 7. I think we can imply Jordan. We can imply Joe's, you won a lot. You can't get one heartbreak because,
the Spurs won a dynasty.
Spurs won a lot of games. So I don't think you can, if you won a lot, does it count as heartbreak?
Don't you think it's that Derek Fisher shot too where the clock operated?
It wasn't a finals though.
Still, that was a hell of a devastating
You don't think
loss.
He got that off in .4?
I don't.
Really?
Yeah.
You can catch and shoot in .4.
Yeah, but that's why the NBA changed having the who was on the clock for games too.
Really?
Yeah.
0282 is a Falcons fan, 28-3. That was in Houston.
Yeah.
I can see that one. That was Shanahan.
Kyle Shanahan for sure it was. Got a job right after
Matt
that, too.
Matt Ryan's MVP year. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go back out to the HRP listener line. Ryan, what was the most painful loss for you?
It's not really a game per se, but my most painful loss is when the Oilers left Houston.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a good one.
That's one that we still kind of feel, right? Like, you do have a new franchise, which is good, because it would be stink if you didn't have an NFL franchise in this city. But we still kind of see it thrown in our face
the
with
uniforms.
Tennessee, with the wearing the hats on draft day, honoring former Houston Oilers players. So, that's
throwbacks
one that
you're going to wear against the Texans this year.
We still feel that one.
Yeah. So
that's a good call when the Oilers left.
Well, I'm surprised more people weren't, because I was at the home games of the World Series against the White Sox. That was the closest sweep in World Series history. Every game was tight. That was the Blummer home run was a 14 inning game.
Those extras, yeah.
That was a tough World Series.
I'm trying to think of why that's not up there. Maybe because Blummers was against the Astros at Minute Maid, where it wasn't a walk off, but Pesednik had his walk off.
Yeah.
I think it was it game one or two? I can't remember. It was in Chicago. 713-780-ESPN. Let's continue this on the other side. What are your most heartbreaking, painful losses as a sports fan? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. God listens to us too. Informed opinions are oftentimes presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Adrian says game 7 against the Nationals. Most heartbreaking losses that you've had as a sports fan. 713-780-ESPN. A little dink off the foul pole. So annoying. That's forever going to be super annoying in Houston sports history. I was in there, too. A little dink off the foul pole. You can hear it resonate through the ballpark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Garrett Cole right below me warming up in the bullpen.
Ugh.
713.
Yeah, that was painful. I have a question, though.
Yeah.
Was Solar's home run for the Braves?
Probably not, because it wasn't as impactful of a moment. It was early in the series, game one, game two.
So.
It was a bomb. I want him in Houston, by the way.
Woo.
That's one of my trade targets.
Miami right now?
Yeah, he's crushing it. He's on a 50 home run pace.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I want him in Houston big time.
So we said, the Patriots fan, the Spurs fan, they can't complain. So the Astros have to win one more World Series before we can't complain about the National Series?
No, you can complain about that forever.
Okay.
Yeah, you can always complain about that. I'm willing to give the Patriots, like, they also, like, yeah, they won a lot. It's the old Patrick Ewing quote. Yeah, we make a lot of money, but we spend a lot of money, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you still get heartbroken even if you win a lot. Like, it's just, like, that's the way feelings work, is even if you have a lot of happiness and a lot of joy, the times that you get in your fillers, whenever negative things happen, you still feel it, too.
Was the Braves series because McCullers was hurt, too, that it kind of screwed up their rotation?
They had lack of starting rotation in that, because they were counting a lot on Luis Garcia.
Wasn't that the whole playoff run where the starters struggled mightily to get deep into games?
Yeah. It was. Yeah, because that was the Red Sox ALCS.
I was going back and forth between the Nationals, the year they lost the Nationals, and the year they lost the Braves.
Yeah, the pitching staff was fine for the Nationals.
Yep.
But the pitching staff was not, like, they were, it was Fromber and Luis Garcia.
It was a running joke. Could the relief, who was going to pitch more innings, the relief pitcher or the starters?
We were doing shows then, right?
I don't think so.
Were we not?
I don't think so.
I think we were.
Were we?
Because we were talking, remember, like, that was the ALCS. That was the ALCS of Boston.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
I don't remember. 713-780-ESPN.
Joe definitely wasn't here.
No, he wasn't here. No. Yeah, look at that. He was coming over in there. He joined the bandwagon, though.
Yeah, he was over there.
We're always welcome people on the bandwagon. If you want to join the bandwagon during the summer of the bees, you're more than welcome. Hot bee summer. 713-780-3776. Most painful losses you've ever experienced as a sports fan. Sterling, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's yours, Sterling?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Long time Indianapolis fan. Many years to say that disappointed me, but I think it was 2007 playing the Steelers AFC Championship, and Roethlisberger threw an interception, and he was the one to catch the defensive back in a wide open field, and we end up losing the game. Thank you.
There you go. Appreciate the call.
I thought it was going to be the liquored up kicker. I thought when Vander Jack missed a kick or something.
He was liquored up in the Pro Bowl.
Hey, was.
5798, from a U of H perspective, where does the loss to Southern Miss in the 11 Conference USA Championship rank? Houston was fifth in the polls going into it. That one stung bad. You know why I don't think that college football heartbreak is quite the same? It's because, like, even that year, U of H can't win the national championship. Mm-hmm. Like, it cost them a spot. I believe it was going to be in the Orange Bowl. Maybe the Sugar Bowl. I get the New Year's Six game, mixed up. But they were on their way. They were going to go to a New Year's Six game. It was a BCS at the time. It was going to be great. But even then, you're not winning the Natty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that, it's a little difficult. That's why I love the college football playoff now, and I love going to the Big 12, because now your stakes are bigger. You're playing for a national championship. Even in 11, when you had your heart broken in the Conference USA Championship game against Southern Miss, thank you, Kevin Sumlin, you weren't going to win the national title.
Right. I think I'm surprised that no one's mentioned Fi Slama Jamma yet.
They did.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, we mentioned that early.
Because that's the 84 one, against that NC one State. That just, ugh. I mean, that was the most talented team in the nation. That was, that was just not supposed to happen.
Drexler was gone that year.
Clyde played in it because.
That's right, he had the early fouls.
Yeah, he got foul trouble. So that was I used to, as part of my duties with the Rockets, I had to schedule all the interviews if anybody wanted to interview our guys. Clyde would not talk about that. We'd get CBS Sports, we'd get ESPN, we'd get 30 for 30, we'd get documentaries. And Clyde says, yeah, I'll do the interview unless they want to talk about the Fi Slama Jamma year and the loss to NC State. He goes, I'm so tired of doing those interviews. And he just didn't want to do them.
He didn't want to do them?
No.
Let me look at something real quick.
Because Drex got in foul trouble in that game.
Was it that game or was it the year before? Those years are running together for me. Yeah, okay. They went to back-to-back finals.
Yeah, because they lost to Georgetown, right?
That was the final year. That's whenever Drexler wasn't there. So that was actually 83. When they played NC State, it was 83. Mm-hmm. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. 0002, I'm old enough to remember great boxing like Sugar Ray, Duran Hagler, Julio Cesar, but the Buster Douglas KO of Mike Tyson blew my mind. Me too. But not heartbreaking.
Right.
Like, Tyson was
shocking.
Shocking. Stunning. Mike Tyson, I loved Mike Tyson as a kid before all the weird stuff. I thought he was the most exciting, interesting, entertaining athlete in the world. But the team element, I think, kind of throws that over everything else.
Sure. I can see that. But, I mean, I was with you. I mean, this was this phenom. This was this unbelievable story about coming from nothing and poverty and Customato, and then just the way he annihilated anybody that came in his path.
So fun.
That was so shocking when he lost that fight.
1884 was only second round, but Cougs lost to Michigan in the tournament. We mentioned that one earlier. I threw my pin into the air whenever it happened. Jordan Poole hitting that 30-footer. Tyler Hero the next year, though, man. Like, hitting that transition three.
You know, I don't remember the Hero shot.
Yeah, transition three. Kentucky lost to Auburn next round. I think we were a great matchup with Auburn. I think we would have went to a Final Four there if Hero misses that shot. 713-780-ESPN. Back out to the HRMP listener line. Chip, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's the most painful loss for you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good
stuff, man.
So, I gotta have a tie, but one is going to be the U of H loss versus Baylor in the Final Four, only because I was in a room full of Baylor fans. That really hurt. And it was a blowout. The other one was the 2021 against the Rays when we were down 3-0. When we came back and we got a game seven. I actually went to that game. It was like the first project I had back after COVID.
Yep.
And I was working in Atlanta. I drove down 7 hours, bought a $2,000 ticket just to watch Charlie Morton pitch an absolute gem. And Lance McCullers kind of blew the game early for us. And that one was probably heartbreaking too, because it was the first game I was able to watch after COVID. And that was... I was very excited. It didn't go
our way.
I'll let you guys
talk. Appreciate it, Chip. Yeah,
the first part of the playoffs, they didn't allow anybody at the games.
I think
coming out of COVID.
I think that's right.
Yeah,
and then like wasn't second the, round they
the
allowed
World Series
fans.
Was in Arlington, right? And that's where they let the full fans back in.
There was fans in the Rays Astros series.
I think they went the championship series. They let some in.
Yeah,
and then I think because of sponsor commitments and everything else, they let more fans in for the World Series.
I think that they went from like 25 to like 50.
That's probably
percent
too
capacity.
Bad for a ticket.
It's a lot, but there was only like 25% capacity, I believe. That one's tough for me because that whole year was so weird. Like, I didn't really care a whole lot about that year, but if they won a World Series, I would have claimed it.
It was a hell of a comeback.
Yeah, down 3-0. I had COVID during that series.
Oh, did you?
So, like, I was struggling to stay awake. Like, that was... like,
that was Correa's bomb,
I had COVID
Correa
like half
was
a dozen
really
times.
Heroic.
I think he hit the walk-off in game six.
In six, yeah.
Forced the game seven. But, like, I remember I was... That was, like, the first of six times I had COVID. And I was in and out of sleep. Like, I was having trouble staying awake during that game. Yeah, it was pretty rough. Let's see. There was one here I wanted to read.
By the way, did you see scalpers ticket prices they mentioned for game seven of the Heat Celtics were $28,000 a ticket for anything in the lower bowl?
Which
close,
game?
Close to the Celtics Heat game seven.
Oh, really? That's
28
cool.
grand.
8596, Warren Morris, LSU walk-off home run against the Canes to win the 96 College World Series, broke Alex Cora's heart.
That's specific.
That was pretty specific. A lot of people were saying, I'm not going to read those. Stop sending your mean tweets. 3501, Crane firing Luno was a painful loss. That's an interesting one.
That's kind of.
That was an interesting one. Crane built the whole
there.
Thing. I'm not so sure if the Astros didn't get out on the right time, though. I think they might have gotten out at the right time with Luno.
I mean, they won another World Series, so like I know it sucks that Luno's not here, but they won another World Series.
With Click, yeah. But it's Luno's build. It's Luno's build, though.
For sure.
713-780-ESPN. Let's get one more. Simon, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. What's your most heartbreaking loss ever?
Luno's build. Oh. Luno's build. Hello?
Yep, yes. You're on.
Go ahead. Turn the radio down.
Do we lose Simon, or do we lose his radio?
Okay. All right, Simon, try now.
Go, Simon.
You got me?
Yes.
Yeah, we got you, Simon.
Yeah, man, mine's, I got to go back to, man, I got to go all the way back, man, to Cowboys, Pittsburgh, Steelers, man.
All right.
Which one? Simon says, turn your radio back up.
He's gone.
Okay.
A lot of Cowboy fans. Bear Brother. The worst was when Lucy pulled the ball away from Charlie Brown.
Oh, geez.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. Will's a bit. Every day at 2:30, a new Will's a bit. We never know which way the Will's going to land. We have no idea. We have no idea what we're even doing this week because we have no idea what any of this stuff is. So we'll figure it out
no
on the other side. We do know this. Will of Bits say nice things. No idea what that means. We'll figure it out next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Doing just enough. Not to get fired.
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
It's the Wheel of Bits on the Killer Bees.
Kibbles and bits, kibbles and bits. I'm going to get me some kibbles and bits.
Who knows the bits the bees will begrudgingly bite?
It's time to say nice things.
Well, let's find out. Here's Joel and Jeremy. And Joe.
Killer Bees, I thought you were going to lead us back here, Joe, because this will is a bit.
It's Joe's deal.
What we do now, 2:30.
Yeah.
We have no idea what's on this will of bits. How many bits do we have?
Like,
just guess. Ballpark, 12 or so?
At least.
We have 12 bits.
Well, because the one we did yesterday, today, and tomorrow were not on our list. They're all brand new.
We did yesterday?
Yesterday we did Start, Sit, Cut.
Yeah, so that's one that wasn't on our
list? No, we added it to it. Now, Say Nice Things will be next.
And then we have one tomorrow that's going to be new?
Yeah, one tomorrow is going to be very new.
So we have like a dozen bits.
Electric.
That we just roll the wheel every day, and whatever it lands on, we do?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, what is this one? This one is Say Something Nice, Say Nice Things.
This one is dedicated to the people who think that we are negative Nancys on this show.
I say nice things all the time.
Okay. So
I love that response.
I'm going to give you guys a topic.
Okay.
And for the next 7 minutes, you're only allowed to say nice things, nothing negative.
Oh, is this like Homer Hattie?
So today's topic, say nice things about the Texans trading up and giving up next year's first and acquiring Will Anderson in the 2022.
You're say that again.
You're brutal for doing this.
Say nice things about the Will Anderson trade.
Oh, man.
That's all you can do.
You hate us.
Exactly. There's no doubt. Like,
yesterday, he's trying to get brutal. Yesterday, he's trying to get us kicked out of the city. He's trying to get us Jeremy Booth.
Yeah.
With whatever we had to do yesterday. We had to do a what? All-star? No, Hall of Famer, starter, and cut.
I don't know, out of the league.
Out of the league in 5 years. And he's trying to get us to throw C.J. Stroud, Drew Gilbert, or Jalen Green out of Houston.
Yeah.
He's trying to get us canceled in the Houston sports radio landscape.
I'm trying to get you over now. I'm trying to get the people.
Are you?
Yeah.
Maybe you are.
I'm trying to get you guys. This is a wrestling move. I'm trying to get you guys over with the crowd, with the fans, that you're finally going to say something nice about the Houston Texans trading up, giving up all that draft capital, and acquiring Will Anderson.
So we're pandering to the fan base.
Just say nice things. You can say whatever you want.
Who panders to the fan base more than anybody else in the Houston sports radio landscape?
Like which station?
We can go a different reasons with this. We can go station. We can go show. We can go person.
Person. Yeah. I will let you quickly answer that question if you'd like.
He's trying to run the clock. We're trying to go four corners.
I'll go Highway to Hell Station.
Of course.
I'll go Highway to Hell Station.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Show? I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
What should we do?
I don't know. I don't listen to that show because we're working.
Obviously, I don't
like,
either.
I couldn't tell you. I couldn't grade that. I have no idea. I would say it's either the morning or the drive on the Highway to Hell.
Okay.
As like the most drive. Pandering.
I'd say drive.
Probably drive.
Yeah,
I would go with drive.
And a cowboy.
Yeah. But
that
they
don't
pander.
Have a clue about other sports.
A Baytown baddie.
But pander to the local, whatever, 11 or 9.
Remember how we
so
said
I'll go there.
How impressive C.J. Stroud was because he admitted that he didn't know what he didn't know?
Yeah. Like, there's a lot
more people should do that.
How about person?
Oh, man.
I mean.
I think I got one in mind.
I like him. I'm a fan. But it's got to be A.C.,
yeah.
It's got to be.
You guys are going to get me in so much trouble.
It's got to be. I like him personally. I really do. I really do like him personally. But it's got to be. That's the answer.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. I'm going
to
get canceled.
Or Stoots to the Texans, maybe?
That's good.
I still lean what I went with first.
Because it's team specific.
I lean what I went with first. Who do you think is the biggest panderer?
I'm good with what you said.
All right. So what are we doing here, Jim?
All right. Say nice things about the Will Anderson trade.
All right. You can lead us off, Blank.
I'm trying to be extremely... Extremely.
This isn't hard.
Positive. No, I, from this regard, look, I think it put the Texans back on the map. I think that from a standpoint of being just the absolute laughing stock of the league for so many reasons, going from Easterby, going to the Deshaun Watson situation, you know, going through two coaches, doing all the things that they did, they raised eyebrows in a positive way when they suddenly had two of the top three picks in the draft. And that made people take notice that they aren't going to be the doormat anymore, that they're going to try and put their names on the map for the right reasons, and they're going to hopefully get the kind of players that are going to take them to another level. And then when it basically sent the message, too, that winning's going to matter again. They got the coach right, then they made this move. That kind of all in one big cluster said to the rest of the football world, hey, look, we're coming back, and we've got some things to say because we just went and did something that not a lot of teams would be willing to do.
8779 says, say nice things turned into talking bad about other stations and shows. I was trying to filibuster.
I just tried to say.
Great job. I give you a 10 out of 10.
I was trying to filibust.
Now it's Jeremy's turn.
Yeah, Poncho. I tried to filibust
no,
as much.
No, Jeremy,
then.
Answer the Poncho, question.
Poncho, I will. I'll Jeremy. Get there. I'll, yeah, get there. I'll the do it. Line. I'll do it. I'll do it. Poncho says that we should rename this segment, though, this bit, to be kind, because it's the number one rule on our Twitch, to be kind. We should totally change it to be kind.
We can do that.
Instead of say nice things. I wish you would have told me to bring my Homer hat, because I feel more comfortable saying nice things when I'm wearing my Homer hat. It allows me to go into character to a place that I don't. It's like my alter ego of Homerism.
Just say it.
Let me take a deep breath. Okay. The Texans trading up to number 3 and selecting Will Anderson shows that Nick Caserio has bravado and cojones, that he wants to go get his guy, and he believes in Will Anderson so much that he is believing that he's going to be a future defensive player of the year. He thinks he's going to be an anchor on a defensive line that is a top 10 defense that is led by DeMeco Ryans, a fantastic defensive coordinator in the NFL, who last year had San Francisco as the number one defense in the NFL. Secondly, it shows relevancy for the Houston Texans. It shows that they are serious again about being a real football team in the NFL. Because now when we talk about the Houston Texans, we look at a team that has potentially a cornerstone, a quarterback with C.J. Stroud, potentially a cornerstone, a defensive end to anchor that defensive line that's going to swarm, as DeMeco Ryans says. So it does make them relevant. It shows that Nick Caserio is bold. I encourage bold moves. I appreciate moves that show bravado, and they're putting their careers on the line. Like, Nick Caserio is putting his career on the line for this trade. So he is telling you that he is convinced it is going to work. And whenever Nick Caserio tells you things are going to work, darn it, things are going to work.
There you go. That's good.
Are we done?
Now you say nice things about it,
Will
Joe.
Will Anderson's a really good football player, and they got the best defensive player in this draft that didn't have a near criminal record.
Is it near, or is it just a criminal record?
I don't know. Does Jalen
Carter
have...
Has he been convicted yet?
I don't know. That's why I don't
know.
He
got booked.
I know he got booked.
He turned himself in.
But, I don't know the
because
semantics
their charges
of that.
Pending, but I don't know that... I think he's
fighting.
There
was a warrant out for his arrest. That is a criminal charge.
Yeah, but it...
But it doesn't go on your record if you fight
stick.
It.
Are we assuming it's not going to stick?
No, that's why I said... That's why I didn't say it for sure. Criminal record.
I think there's a criminal record there.
I think it might. I mean, it's at the moment it is.
He's also being sued.
But they got a really good football player. Like, that to me is the number one thing. Like, the best overall football player the last 2 years in the SEC. He dominated the best level of competition. Jalen Carter was really good last year, but the year before he got overshadowed by multiple players on that Georgia defense. Will Anderson has stood out on one of the best teams in college football for 2 years.
I think you throw in there, too, is just the overall organizational perception and the fact that they kind of went from basically hot snot to, and just dog crap to the fact that people are taking notice. And even the ownership has changed. It hasn't changed in terms of who the people are, but they're trying to change their ways. And they're trying to be more reactionary and trying to do the right things, football first. And you got a franchise quarterback when everybody wanted you to come out of this draft taking a big swing, no matter which guy it was, at a chance to have another franchise quarterback getting over again the Watson situation. So I think that those things factor in as well, too. And I think that from all the negativity to have DeMeco in front of all of this as well as Caserio, but DeMeco's the front man. And people are so high on DeMeco right now that after a move like this and getting him being an Alabama guy, getting an Alabama a linebacker / defensive end, I think people are taking notice in a positive way.
The Versace.
Proud of you guys.
Versace. Thanks. Next time we do, I don't like this. I don't like this bit.
Why?
Because we actually have to try and be like other people are every day.
No, you just have
painful.
To say nice things.
Because we can't be honest.
You can be honest and say nice things. I didn't say you have to lie like Jeremy did.
I wasn't lying.
Well, it was forced.
It was definitely forced. It's the whole point of the segment.
But there, you can say nice things.
I mean, I said that on draft day.
I know.
When the Texans traded for Will Anderson, I said that the Texans now have become a relevant NFL organization. Like, that is a true stance. I totally believe that. Both things can be true. Next time we do that, though, I need to know so I can wear my Homer hat.
It's not always going to be a Texans one because, okay.
Versace wants me to answer the question, do I love the Texans?
Yes.
Do I really love the Texans? I like the Texans a lot. I like them a lot. I like the Texans
That's
a whole lot.
That's a dating thing. We're not exclusive.
Yeah, you're not in love.
We're not exclusive, no, I mean, but I really like you.
I'm exclusive to the Texans. No, I'm exclusive to the Texans when it comes to NFL teams. There's no one near the Houston Texans for me when it comes to NFL
teams.
Put
a ring on it?
Yeah, sure. I mean,
they're not going to.
Half of marriages end up in divorce. They're not going to. You're right. Look, The Texans.
Positivity.
The Texans are my number one NFL team. There is zero doubt about the Texans being my number one team. There is zero doubt about that.
No doubt they are.
No one's even close to being number one. Like, there is no way. But if we're comparing it to like the Houston professional organizations, Rockets, Astros, Texans, I have more history with the Rockets and the Astros. I just do. I like the Texans more than every single NFL team. Do I love the Texans more than the Astros or the Rockets? No. The Astros and the Rockets have won titles for me. They've brought me joyous moments. They've been around longer. They've been here my entire life. Texans have not. But clearly the Texans are my number one team. And I can get there someday with the Texans. I can see the L word in the future with the Houston Texans.
What's it going to take?
But do I love the Texans right now? I like them a lot.
AFC title game?
I don't even need that
like,
much.
To like be really in love?
I mean, it's kind of been a love-hate relationship with the Texans, and I love the whole J.J. Watt era. I love Andre. I loved Arian. The Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby stuff was, like, awful. Like, I hated them for that. But I do love the Texans. I have a love-hate with the Houston Texans. But all of my passion comes from a state of love.
You loved the letter jackets, didn't you?
No. Those are awful. 713-780-ESPN. Do you love the Houston Texans? 713-780-3776. I was watching the post-game show yesterday, Blankers, for the Astros.
Okay.
I think I picked up on Dusty Baker throwing some shade at Yiner Diaz. I'm going to run it by you guys, see what y'all think. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So, spent the last couple minutes there talking about my love or not love of the Houston Texans. One thing that will never be challenged, that will never be questioned, is my love for Gentle Ben. And I love them for a variety of reasons. At the top of that list is because Gentle Ben is simply the best. Whether it's the vodka, best in the state, the gin, best in the market, or the bourbon, the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards. Gentle Ben uses their innovative revolutionary technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits that you'll ever taste. Smooth, clean, eliminates the burn. Don't labor through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. And you can do that, of course, with Gentle Ben. Head over to GentleBen.com to learn more about their incredible story. You can sign up to win Astro tickets, by the way. Win Astro tickets courtesy of Gentle Ben. They love you, too. Head to the Gentle Ben tasting room or stop at your favorite liquor store on the way home and pick up a bottle today. Also changing those bottles. The next couple of weeks, transitioning to the new look bottles that they'll have in store. So you might have to train your eye for the new bottle, but still, be on the lookout for that. Ask for Gentle Ben, too, the next time you're at your favorite bar or restaurant. Are you headed to the Astros game tonight? Well, there's a Gentle Ben bar inside Minute Maid Park. How about that? Just to the left of the Crawford boxes, right when you walk in the Union Station entrance. Pick up some Gentle Ben on your way to the seats and watch the Astros play some baseball. Gentle Ben, you'll love what's not in it.
ESPN97.5.com. This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Welcome back, Houston. It's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hunter Brown on the mound tonight. Rookie of the Year in the American League? Maybe. Astros could get draft picks if he wins Rookie of the Year, by the way. Be a good way to rebuild the organization. Win a Rookie of the Year. Hunter Brown, though, 5-1, 3.12 ERA. I haven't seen a lineup yet. Louis Varland. Can you show me that on a map? Is pitching for Minnesota.
What's the ERA on a Louis Varland?
It's north of 4. 4.24 earned run average. 3780 Branham thinks the Texans have a nice personality. They do. They have a nice personality, especially with D'Amico. 8693. Do y'all remember y'all's heated debate back in 21 about, I think, Mills? And then y'all had a pivot to interview the Chicago host about baseball. I could feel the awkwardness through the radio. Signature moment for the Killer Bees, IMO.
Who lost the bet, the guy from Chicago.
That's right. Because we were talking about the bet the other day.
Yeah, the hoodie guy.
That's probably why I didn't remember the bets, because we had that spirited debate about
it was
Davis
spirited,
Mills.
All right. Yeah.
I don't even remember what side we were on about that. Do you?
Yeah, that I thought that there was, at least, you have to at least say that there's potential, and you had already shut the door, and that he was completely done.
Well, I mean, scoreboard. People on the Twitch line hate the Texans. They're saying junior Broncos, Texans are actually more entertaining as losers. Fake Tony Stark, I love laughing at the Texans. These are all very bad. These are bad things. Stop saying these mean things on the Twitch. We're not going to read these things on the air. 713-780-ESPN. Tigers are beating the Rangers 3-2.
Don't jinx it. It's in like the ninth inning.
Yeah. It's in the ninth. I said Mariznick homered earlier. That's because I was misled by the Twitchers. Apparently, he had a single, an RBI single. Anyways, Texans are the Tigers are winning 3-2. We'll see what happens. I was listening to the post game yesterday with Dusty. I think Dusty Baker's throwing some shade at Yiner Diaz. I want you guys, because I have a theory that Dusty Baker kind of speaks on things through different things. Like, if he's talking about topic A, he won't talk about topic A unless he's answering a question about topic B. It's kind of a passive-aggressive behavior, if we're being a little bit honest. But I feel like he has a way of kind of answering questions about other things through different questions. So Dusty Baker yesterday, he was asked about the performance of Brandon Belak. Instead, he praises his catcher.
Sally, you know, he followed suit tonight. And like I said, Salazar called a very good game, too. And, called an excellent game. So, you know, he did what I asked him to pay attention last night. Their hitters and followed the game plan well. And, he called a very good game.
There you go. Dusty Baker going out of his way to talking about how good of a game Sally called. He got a pet name for his third string catcher, who might be his backup catcher.
Resonating with me and all that.
Go ahead.
He listened.
Yeah.
Because
game plan.
Yeah. But he listened, which is basically the message to Diaz. Maybe you aren't listening or paying as much attention as you need to.
So, just a little bit of shade towards Yiner?
There's no doubt about it. Right? I worked for coaches that did this. Jeff Van Gundy was like maybe the most guilty of doing this, which is using the media as a pawn to get your message through, because in the case of Van Gundy, he really didn't like confrontations with players, and so he used the media to try and deliver messages like this. I think Dusty's doing exactly that.
Okay. So what do you think, Joe? A little bit of shade there towards Yiner Diaz, like kind of passive-aggressively sending a message to Yiner Diaz, which, by the way, that was Salazar's second start at catcher since I think it's either May 12th or May 13th. You can look up the dates, but it's May 12th, May 13th. Salazar has had two starts behind the plate since then. Yiner's had three. So, like, he's had a couple of starts at DH, but Yiner started three games since May 12th.
We thought he was going down. Salazar.
Has started two games behind the dish. Here's one more from Dusty Baker, where I think he's throwing a little bit of shade at Yiner Diaz. This was about the relief pitchers. Here's what Dusty Baker had to say.
You know, the thing about young guys is you get a bit of inconsistency sometimes. So, that's why it's so important that the catchers navigate them through the lineup and through the game.
Dusty Baker, twice yesterday, went out of his way. Yiner Diaz wasn't even in the lineup. Dusty Baker went out of his way to talk about how great Sally did at executing the game plan right there towards the end of his press conference when talking about the relievers, how important it is to have a catcher guiding them. Dusty Baker does not like Yiner Diaz as a catcher.
I'm not going to go so far as to say he doesn't like him. But I think that what he's doing is making it a teachable moment and basically maybe not doing it the most direct way a coach or manager should. But I think he's essentially trying to get through to his young catcher to make him understand there's more that you're not doing right now or not doing correctly that you need to work on. And whether it's him telling him or not, the message has to get through.
I don't think he likes Dusty. I don't think he likes Yiner as a catcher. I don't think that he trusts him with the game planning. I don't think he likes him guiding pitchers through games. Salazar started one fewer game since May 12th. He's going out of his way to talk about the greatness of Salazar. He's going out of his way to talk about how important it is for a catcher to guide pitchers throughout the game. Like, this is him showing his love for Maldi. I think he likes Salazar quite a bit. I think he probably, banged on the table to keep Salazar up when they sent down David Hensley. And that's something we've heard with Yiner Diaz, too, like coming up through the minor league system. It's like, can he play catcher defensively at the big league level? You know, he's got a pop time. He's got a cannon for an arm. That's not the issue. But there's been times when he's a little lazy with balls in the dirt where he tries to pick them instead of block them. And I think that Dusty Baker has all but told us, without actually telling us, that he doesn't like Yiner Diaz behind the plate in terms of guiding pitchers through a game.
Yeah, I think this is not done so easily, and this method isn't used when you're talking about more veteran players. But when you're trying to really kind of mold a young player, I think this is a teaching tool that's worked in the past where you can get through to a kid because maybe with your assistant coaches and others, it's just not sinking in. Maybe if Maldi's trying to teach him the ropes on how to have, you know, your prep work done and what to do with your meeting with your pitchers, and if he's not doing it or is just disinterested in some part of it, this is a way that maybe you rattle the cage a little bit and shake him up and say, hey, you want to know why you're not catching more? You want to know how you can catch more? Start doing some of these things, too.
It could be that, too. It could be that as well.
Where we know he also holds grudges because he evidently, I don't know if he's finally over it or not, but he hasn't liked Chaz his whole career.
Well reported. Not a huge fan of Chaz. Look, I don't know if Yiner Diaz is going to catch a whole lot for the Astros. We even had the contradicting statements from Dana and Dusty. Dana Brown saying they want Yiner Diaz to have 300 plate appearances this year. He ain't coming close to that. Why? Because Dusty doesn't play him behind the plate. Why? Because Dusty doesn't trust him behind the plate to guide his pitchers. He's going out of his way to tell you that indirectly. I think it's pretty clear. Chandler Rome just tweeted about half an hour ago, Astros didn't list probables for their Angels series, but Ronel Blanco is scheduled to start tomorrow for AAA Sugarland, according to the Space Cowboys.
Well, evidently, he's not.
I don't know if that really, like, Sugarland game notes, is that going to have an impact of the Astros calling up Ronel Blanco? I don't think so.
Well, in the past, didn't we see? Well, we saw with J.P. France that they held him out when he was going to be called up and pitch in Seattle.
Yeah. To me, it's more about game of as opposed to game notes. Like, I don't care about the game notes.
It also could be that they wrote the majority of those previous to this and just, you know, he's a probable. And they also, gamesmanship-wise, don't have to do this till they have to announce a starting pitcher. So maybe they'll change it.
Yeah, he's a probable, not scheduled starter. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What do you think the Wheelhouse is leading off with today?
Astros.
You think they're going to lead off with the Astros?
Yeah.
That they got their bounce-back victory. It's what championship organizations do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The way they're supposed to handle business.
Able to avoid losing streaks because championship organizations figure out ways to win games.
Yep.
Joe, you got one. You're grabbing the mic like you're ready to go.
Yeah, he cheated.
He's got one in the chamber.
No, I didn't cheat. I was doing something else out there. But there's OTAs. DeMeco met with the media. Come on.
I was looking at in my prep today, CBS Sports, they had an article about the top remaining free agents. They listed Ben Jones with a reunion with the Houston Texans. They're leading with Ben Jones reuniting to be the backup center for the Houston Texans, and there's zero doubt in my mind that's what they're going with. All right, it's going to do it for us. We'll see. Make sure you're listening to the Wheelhouse to figure it out. All right, he's Joe George. Thanks to all the hard work most of the day. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston.
You,
the Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 in the studio with the candlestick.
Mrs. Peacock was a man?